Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
So whether it's strong winds, heavy rain or extreme cold, we know that winter can take a toll on our homes. But before we have to batten down the hatches, I'm joined from our Cork studio by Rob McGarry, who's a plumbing contractor from Cork, and Kieran McCarthy, engineer, house builder and co-presenter of Cheap Irish Homes on RTE Television. And you're both welcome. Thank you for being with us today. So Kieran, for you, you want us to start with the gutters, to check them out. And now is the time of year to do it, is it?
Good morning, Claire. I suppose, look, we've had a big change in our weather this week compared to last week. We have the beginnings of autumn coming at us, I suppose. And I suppose it's a bit down the road before we're going to have the freeze, you would have thought. But the first thing you really see in autumn, of course, is the wind. And if you're living near lots of trees, the trees are particularly deciduous trees. The leaves are starting to go brown now. Some of the leaves are beginning to fall off. So it may be that your gutters need a clean anyway from last year. So it'll be well worth giving them a quick clean now, because in the next month, certainly between winds and deciduous trees, they're going to become filled with leaves. Mm-hmm. So best to have a quick look now and maybe another look in, you know, a month, 6 weeks' time.
OK, so that's our starting point. And we've so many questions in, which I'll get to in a minute. But Rob, for you on the plumbing side, you want us to switch on the heating to make sure everything is working.
That's right, Claire. How are you?
Very well.
Yeah, I suppose switch on the heating now just to be sure that it's actually working, because you'll be amazed the amount of people that will wait until it's actually freezing, and there will be a percentage of boilers that won't actually run after being switched off for so long.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's take a look now at some of the questions. And the first one, Rob, is for you. And this listener says that they got the radiators flushed out, but it's resulted in the radiators working upstairs. Downstairs, they're either stone cold or barely heating. So they reckon there's a blockage somewhere between upstairs and downstairs. One solution that has been suggested is to run a separate system for downstairs. Is that feasible? They want to know. The heating system is 30 years old.
Well, it's not really. I suppose I'd be saying, obviously, enough, get a plumber to check it. I mean, it might be a case of just, it could be airlocked, so it might be a case of just trying to fix the airlock, which would usually be, if they turn off the radiators upstairs, it might force the heat to downstairs, and that could clear it. Mm-hmm. After that, really, it's get a plumber in to just check it, you know.
Rob, we say airlock and we hear about airlock, but what is it? What does that mean when you say that?
It's basically a bubble of water in the pipe that's preventing the water from circulating, and it can be the slightest little thing, but it'll stop it from circulating. Water will always take the easiest route, you mm-hmm. know.
Okay, well, we've a heating question here, Kieran, but I might just bring this to you because it relates to the building as well. So this listener has an average 1974 bed home in Dublin. They've kerosene heating. The boiler is 18 years old. They don't have underfloor heating, just radiators. Is it possible to heat this home by changing that boiler to a heat exchanger?
I suppose it is in the long term, but I mean, if you start changing to a heat exchange, like a heat pump or whatever, you really have to look at the external envelope of the home. So, like, you'd have to look at the air tightness, you'd have to look at the insulation, because when you start looking at heat pumps or whatever, you really need a very efficient envelope. So it depends on what kind of BER rating the home is currently at, you know.
Okay, so some considerations there before you go to that. And Rob, this listener is wondering about an air-to-water heating system, which we hear a lot about now too, and they want to know how easy would it be to install that in a 220-year-old house with an oil heating system.
Well, look, it's easy enough to install it, but it's how efficient it'll actually work afterwards. You know, as Kieran said, the insulation is a big thing, and like, heat pumps are fantastic and very economical, provided the envelope of the house is insulated well enough, you know. Mm-hmm. So as far as an old house is concerned, it would take an awful lot to get the heat to hold inside in that house.
So you'd have to check all of that first before you even went down the road of the new heat pump.
Yeah.
This listener, now you're going to solve all of our problems here today, Rob, because this listener has a full hot water cylinder before they go to bed at night, but it's almost cold in the morning. Cylinder is factory lagged. It's been in place for 5 or 6 years. This only started to happen in the last 6 months or so. So what's your diagnosis, Rob?
If there's nobody using it, it sounds like there might be a small leak in the hot water system.
Oh.
That would be my initial thoughts on something like that, you know.
Right. So where do you begin?
Those tanks would normally hold the hot water for a couple of days if it's not used.
Right. So it's getting out somewhere, you think?
Well, it's getting out somewhere. I suppose I'd always say people should familiarise themselves with their own plumbing systems and be able to identify things themselves as well, you know. A small thing is just going up and checking, is the tank in the attic, is the ballcock running during the night when no one's up? If it is, there's water going somewhere, you know.
Right. So how much do you think that we need to know about our own water system and heating system? How technical should we get?
Well, I think everybody should actually understand their system. There's several different types of systems out there. And the old conventional system, which was the tank in the attic and the copper cylinder, there's not many. These aren't really being fitted anymore, you know. Systems are being more and more advanced, and you should know. I mean, your old style system, there wasn't much maintenance. It was just changing a ball cock. But with the newer systems, there's expansion vessels and safety valves that need to be checked on a yearly basis and make sure that they're safe and sound, you know.
Yeah, well, on that, I mean, you mentioned on a yearly basis, people should be having the boiler serviced on a yearly basis as well, shouldn't they?
Well, the boiler serviced, but also, as I said, the actual plumbing system themselves, they should have a regular plumbing health check of the system in the house and familiarise themselves with it themselves, that they know what to watch for, you know.
Hard to get a plumber, Rob, isn't it?
It is, but what we do with a lot of our customers, we have a lot of regular customers, and I'll explain an awful lot to them things that they can do themselves, that they're not having to pay us each time to come out, you know, that they can actually do themselves.
Right, and sometimes people will take a video, I'm sure, of what's gone wrong or what they're doing, and you can talk them through it.
Well, it is. I mean, camera phones have changed that in a big way, you know.
Yeah. All right, now let's come back to our questions, Kieran. We have a listener here who says they're doing an attic conversion for occasional use. They're adding one bedroom and a small office. They're wondering if it's better to change the 15-year-old boiler to a newer, more powerful boiler to do the whole house or fit storage heaters in the attic. They don't have the finance to install a heat pump. And they're wondering as well, if they install solar panels and a battery system, would the power they generate be sufficient to heat the storage heaters in the attic? So essentially, they want a heating solution for this new attic room or rooms that they're putting in there.
Okay, well, the first thing about attic conversions is if you're getting one installed, you really need to get an engineer to design it, because a lot of attic conversions are designed undesigned, and they wouldn't comply with building regulations, and you could actually be just devaluing your house by putting a kind of a makeshift stairs up there and not complying with building regulations. So there is a world of building regulations that come into play if you're creating a three-storey house instead of a two-storey house. Second of all, photovoltaic are excellent. You need to look at the base demand of your house from an electricity point of view, and you can get your solar system designed to meet that, albeit like you'll exceed it in the summer and you'll be less in the winter, but generally speaking you can do an awful lot to meet that with a solar system. The batteries is more for storage than generate electricity, but it all helps. People aren't tending to use storage heaters anymore, really. It's more modern electrical radiators that are thermostatically controlled, which are very effective and are quite low cost, and you can have them come on only when you need them, but obviously you need to make sure that you have the attic well insulated and well ventilated as well.
Now, I have people asking, a good few people asking about heating solutions. So I have a listener wondering, Kieran, about wood pellet stoves. Are they a good option, and are they eco-friendly?
You know, I've never actually installed one. The only thing I'd say about the wood pellet burner is I don't know how much the market has embraced them. I mean, they've been out for 7 or 8, maybe 10 years, and there was a big fuss about them at the start, but I don't know, have they really caught on? People bought them, and then they were finding there was a lot of work in storing all the wood pellets and keeping the store up, keeping the store in place and all that. So they were tricky enough to maintain and store all the pellets and whatever. So I don't think they really took off. I haven't installed them myself, but I probably wouldn't advise them on the basis that the market hasn't really embraced them, from what I know, you know.
I have one.
Okay. What do you think?
It's great. I think it's great. But you know, that's what your husband is for, going out to the shed for the bag of pellets.
There you go. You've sucked it out.
But you know, as an alternative to an open fire or wood burning stove, it's a lot better, I think, environmentally, just in terms of the air that you're breathing in your house, Kieran. It feels a lot better.
Well, I suppose it also depends on what situation you currently have. Like, if you're building a new house, you wouldn't use it. If you're deep retrofitting, you may or may not. But if you're replacing a current stove, then it might be a good substitute then, you know.
Well, we have somebody here who is looking looking for advice in relation to replacing their open fire with a closed wood-burning stove. Now, they say their only form of heating is electric heaters. Their modern ones recently replaced, and they just want to know if the wood-burning stove is recommended in terms of long-term sustainability.
Long-term sustainability, probably not. I mean, you wouldn't put one in a new house because the house is too well insulated. A lot of these come down to how well your house is insulated, because like we've had one or two clients, like we build new houses, but we've had one or two clients who are particularly kind of elderly clients who would be used to having a fire all their lives, and they're really keen on fitting a wood-burning stove in the new house. And you can't, because the house is so well insulated, you're going to be opening the windows and dump the heat from the wood-burning stove. In an older house, if it's less well insulated, they can be quite effective because they'll give a lot of heat quickly from a point source. So even though you might be losing it out through walls and air leakage, they still will be beneficial and get heat quickly into a room that's otherwise losing it. You know? So the envelope really is very important in all these considerations.
Right, yeah, and it's coming up a lot. Now, Rob, back to the plumbing. The water pump on this listener's new air-to-water system is very noisy when the water is running. Is there any way to reduce this? Is that a problem you're coming across?
Well, I mean, it's a sign that there's something wrong. You know, maybe there's a bit of air in the pump, or the speed is up too high, or maybe just the impeller in the pump itself is damaged. You know, I'd say, look, you know, get the plumber back out, have a look at it and
get
see what's
back,
going on. You know?
Get them back.
Like, a lot of these units are coming with big warranties, so just... Well, the warranty's still in place, I'd say check it.
Use it, yeah. Now, this one for you again, Rob. Does a gas central heating system need to be drained if a single thermostat has to be replaced?
It depends on what way the system is. If it's a pressurised system, no. If it's an open vented system with a tank in the attic, then yes.
Mm-hmm. Should we all be able to bleed the radiators, Rob?
You should really, to be honest. It's down to, I suppose, a competent person. As long as you're a competent person and you're shown, you should be able to, you know.
Mm-hmm. And is it something that you should be doing at this time of the year before switching the system on again?
No, you don't necessarily have to bleed your radiators. I'd switch on the heating. And if the radiators are all getting hot and they're heating to the top, you don't need to touch them at all, you know.
Right, okay. All right, listen, great advice from both of you. We'll have to do that again because we're just snowed under with questions coming in. Rob McGarry and Kieran McCarthy, thank you both very much.